Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your let's get abusively, punishingly, crassly physical of music news and criticism. I am your host, John Caramonica. R.I.P. Lamont Dozier, R.I.P. Olivia Newton-John, R.I.P. Issey Miyake. You all would have loved Gulch. Gulch is what we were listening to at the beginning of our show. That was a song called Impenetrable Cerebral Fortress. I know I've been teasing a Renaissance of American Hardcore episode for some time on Popcast, and we're done teasing. We're delivering this week. I regret to inform you, I am a middle-aged white man curious about innovations in American hardcore, and I've got two others with me, and we're going to go deep, deep, deep today into what's been going on. First off, it's Chris Ryan. Chris, co-host of The Watch Pod, dear friend of mine, and crucially, former frontman of Crash Activated. Chris.
Don't even bother with that. Nobody's going to know what you're talking about. That's great. You got to have a better tease than that.
Do your Googles is all I have to say.
It's ungoogleable. It's not.
Exactly.
My hardcore past is just in the dust, man. What's up? It's good to see you, dude.
Tom Bryan is here. Tom B., senior editor at Stereo Gum. Tom, you're doing a book about all the number one songs. The whole time I've been like, I hope this is leading to a book. And it turns out it's actually leading to a book.
The book is happening. We're in the trenches. No hardcore in the book. Absolutely zero.
But all those songwriters certainly would appreciate the concision of hardcore songwriting, I'm sure. All these hit makers. Look at us. We're just guys enjoying rock and roll music here on the Popcast.
It's what everybody says about you.
Yeah, it's exactly right. So longtime listeners of the show will find it curious that I am indeed interested in innovations in American hardcore. But I am, and not simply because of the four-letter word that is turnstile. No shots, just it's a contentious topic. We'll get to it later. For this episode, I'm mostly going to shut up because I know precious little and I'm here to learn. Chris and Tom,
would you just do like a little weird shade on turnstile and then you're like, but I'm not going to talk on my own podcast?
Yes. That's how this show works.
Okay.
That's how this show, I don't know how the other shows work. That's how this show works.
Also, it's important to note that Turnstile rocks super hard.
Turnstile, I like Turnstile. Rule. I like Turnstile. Yeah. It doesn't mean that they're not contentious. It doesn't mean that people don't feel a way about them. It doesn't mean that I can't acknowledge those people's feelings.
Who? Like people in Dime Square? Who
is a Democratic space? First of all, when are you writing your hardcore arrives in Dime Square piece? When are you writing that? From the relative comfort of Silver Lake.
John's putting on for all the butt flat punks out there.
Yeah.
John's like, if it doesn't sound like Osran, it doesn't count.
This is going to be great because I'm going to get washed severely so many times on this episode. I'm really looking forward to it. Both Chris and Tom were generous enough to make me playlists or recommendation lists of bands I should check out. And Chris, also, you recently sent me the Sound and Fury Festival set that Gulch did, which I watched in its entirety and I thought was phenomenal. I loved it. Very aesthetic band, low key. Very aesthetic band. Sidebar, we can come back to the aesthetics of hardcore at some point. But let's start with Gulch. Chris, what can you tell me about this bruiser group?
I guess like the way to start with Gulch is that they are the once and possibly future kings of the scene right now, Tom. I guess that would be like one way of looking at it, just in the sense that they have like created this own present tense mythology about the band, where they like were really only a group for a couple of years and pretty much wrote their own ending, culminating with this last show at Sound and Fury in Los Angeles, which I did not get to attend because I wasn't in LA where I live at the time of the festival, but by all accounts and by all like video evidence was incredible.
And just for clarity, Sound and Fury was a massive hardcore fest that happened 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, at the Exposition Center in LA, there was like 5,000 people there. It just seemed like every set absolutely went off. And I'm going to reference a couple of times, as I'm sure Tom will too. There's a podcast called Axe to Grind, which just did an incredible recap of the entire festival, and people should check that out. And those guys very aptly put it that it was basically like the hardcore 2022 yearbook page. It was like the bands that matter.
They said, and those guys know better than I do, but this was the biggest North American hardcore festival of all time. There's been a lot of hardcore fests out there and been some pretty big ones. And so it definitely seems like Sound and Fury in particular was a moment, and they did a pretty incredible job of picking no legacy acts and all bands that are like completely defining the moment there. And it all culminated with what appears to be Gulch's last set ever. You could not write a better way that a band could go out in like a blaze of glory. That's that band's whole thing in one beautiful, ridiculous spectacle.
Chris, you said writing their own mythology. Why did the band choose to stitch it up so quickly?
I don't know like the biographical details or whatever, but like I know that they, I think, felt like this was a project that would be better served if it was finite, like that they would be able to like execute the things that they wanted to do sonically as far as touring and stuff like that, if it was like a finite amount of time rather than going on and on.
Sound and Fury Fest, you said you were watching some other sets of other artists. And if it indeed was the biggest North American hardcore festival of all time, why is that happening now? Like, I have memories of maybe 5 years ago when Ben Ratliff was still at the paper. Ben would like unearth new hardcore bands on Bandcamp. There seemed like there were like micro scenes starting to bubble in different places. Obviously, I'm sure people will tell me hardcore never went away. It just like lives in places that people like me don't go. It's fine. I look forward to hearing all about that in the comments. That said, there does seem to be a bit of a moment. What exactly is happening to prompt the creation of these bands and also the formation of these communities that are growing the scene?
Hardcore has continued to exist, and the people who are in these bands who are like Gulch and stuff like that, they are lifers. Like, they've been around, they've been in a million other bands. Like, the members of Gulch are also in a couple of bands that played at the very tippy top of the Sound and Fury bill.
Yeah, the drummer for Gulch fronts Drain, which was another headliner of one of the nights.
Yeah, the other night's headliner. I think they share members with Tsunami also, who were like way up on the bill there. And so the scene has been around. I do think that there is a different kind of excitement around it now. And I don't think that's only because like herbs like me are paying more attention than we used to.
Tom, your hair looks great. I don't know what you're talking about. You're looking so good right now.
I'm trying, man. So I think the Turnstile factor plays into it. Like, Turnstile, there's a possibility that that's like the biggest hardcore band of all time, you could argue. But I think there's just a lot of things converging on one point, and there's like there is an aesthetic thing. There's like a crossover between streetwear and all that. And I think that part of the reason that Gulch is ending the way they are is because they're not into the idea that they were all tied up with streetwear and with their merch going for like crazy amounts of money on these secondhand.
Oh, is
sites.
That a thing?
John,
oh,
yeah, I've not seen thing. John's face light up like this in like,
I know, right? So I know obviously like vintage hardcore merch, you know, from the 80s and whatnot, it's highly collectible, extremely desirable. But even with current bands, there's resale issues and things like it's becoming kind of problematic is what you're saying.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Bands do super limited runs of things for individual shows or festivals or whatever. And then those things become massively collectible online to the point where I think in a lot of cases it puts the bands off. So that's been a thing. And then just general accessibility, like Bandcamp, and all these bands are on streaming for the most part. And the infrastructure, the network has always been there. Wherever you are, there is a basement or a church hall or someplace near you that has been having hardcore shows or an equivalent to that space for a lot of years, probably. There's a long-standing tradition of people booking shows in their town and then teaching younger people how to book shows. And so those people then go on to teach other people. Like, this is a community that has been extending for, you know, decades now. But it seems to be at some sort of, like, flashpoint right now. And that's really cool.
First of all, let's listen to something by Turnstile, because I feel like that's the direction that we're going to head in. What do you guys want to listen to from Turnstile? A band that I enjoy.
Gotta go Blackout. That's Blackout. The joint right there.
All
right,
this is Blackout by Turnstile.
I I was most into hardcore as a like part of my social life, as a part of like my identity, like in the mid to late 90s and when I was going to school in Boston. And then ever since then, I would be basically like superficially aware of it still being a vibrant scene, still being a thriving scene, but more through the lens of bands that would emerge and pop just a little bit. So whether it was like Trash Talk or Touche Amore or Power Trip and bands that would kind of emerge out, and then I'd be like, oh, cool, like that's still happening, but wasn't in the cut the way that I feel like I've kind of gotten into in the last 2 years, doing no small part to Tom's writing, doing no small part to Axe to Grind. It kind of reminds me of reading zines back in the 90s, but now you have podcasts and now you have like these Instagram pages, or you have like YouTube where you can feel like you can go to a show every Friday night if you want to. And I don't think that you can underrate that, but there's also at this very moment, it feels like there are five bands that are popping at once. Whereas before, maybe it felt a little bit more like every once in a while you get a comet coming out of the scene and people would be like, oh, cool. And there's also like this huge hardcore scene in Baltimore, or a huge hardcore scene in Texas, or a huge hardcore scene in California. And now it seems like there's like a hyper awareness of like a Baltimore sound and the San Jose scene. And I don't know, I just feels like this has been one of the most pleasant like uses of the internet for me in a really long time, is to feel connected to this through pods, through social, through reading people's writing about it, that it actually just, it kind of reminds me of why I got into music in the first place. So that's why I've been so fired up about it.
I'm glad that we've arrived full circle at the, this is why I got into music in the first place conversation, because I do think that matters.
100%. Like, my trajectory isn't that different from Chris's. Like, I went to a lot of shows when I was younger. When I was a kid in Baltimore, there was like a couple of hardcore bands, and it was mostly a crust punk and like a street punk town. And then that changed big time. But in all my years of dipping in and out of the scene, I just remember there's a show that I was at 6 or 7 years ago, and it was like an indie rock band, and it was a band that I liked. And I was like, oh God, I'm so bored. Like, this sucks. Everybody's drinking IPAs and everybody's either old or like prematurely old. And like, I like this music. Like, why do I want to be anywhere other than here? And then like a little while later, I was in a living room moshing with 10 people, because that's all that could fit in there. And it was like, this feels so different. I feel so much like more alive and so much happier to be here right now. So going to hardcore shows is great for just like making sure that you are in the moment, because if you're not looking, somebody's going to kick you in the jaw. Like, it's like you have to actually be fully present. And I find that
it's a participatory event.
Yes.
Yeah,
exactly. And I also think that another reason why there's been so much excitement about it lately is all the YouTube channels, and especially 856,
yep,
that are devoted to capturing live shows. And you can't experience a hardcore show through a video. Like, that's not possible, because it is a fully physical event. But certain videographers like Sonny Sang, who does 856, are great at understanding that action is not always on the stage, and that if somebody like jumps off and lands on their face, like, you want to capture that, and that'll like help you feel like you're there. And that dude puts up 5 live shows a day. Like, I don't know how he does it. And so there's like a constant moving archive of things that are happening at the moment.
If you're curious about 856, which is an incredible resource, 2 really good pieces about 856 recently, 1 in Rolling Stone and 1 in The New Yorker. So go check those out. Let me ask like kind of maybe like a philosophical question, which is hardcore, in, without getting too deep into like a history lesson, is hardcore at this moment in time a sound, or is it like an ethic / perspective?
I think it's more of a feeling to me, but Tom might be better at answering this. Like, it's because I think one of the things that you saw in Sound of Fury is that a lot of the bands that were up at the higher end of the bill and throughout the entire weekend, and the reason why we keep referring to it is that you could call Sound of Fury a festival, but for the purposes of this conversation, it might as well be a playlist, it might as well be a mixtape, it might as well be like a compilation. It's just, these are the bands that are popping right now. I think half a dozen to a dozen of them might easily be assigned a different genre than hardcore, but they have some sort of connective tissue to hardcore, whether it's previous bands that the members were in, or a way of doing business, or a way of playing, and a way of communicating with the audience that I think feels like it's all the same thing, even if it's not all technically hardcore.
What's another Sound and Fury band that we should listen to while we're on the subject?
Of like hardcore-ish bands or like straight up hardcore bands?
Ish.
God's Hate. God's Hate is a metal band that is.
See, that's
a
the thing is,
band.
Tom says God's Hate, and I was going to say Fiddlehead. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, oh, yeah, no, go Fiddlehead. Fiddlehead's a great call, too.
They couldn't be more different, but they make sense on the same bill together.
Okay, Fiddlehead was on your playlist for me. This is Get My Mind Right. So let's talk about that ish, right? And I think that ish is part of a bigger conversation, touching on what you mentioned a minute ago, going back to Turnstile, Trash Talk, moments in which certain bands seem to have a broader valence than like the narrow hardcore community. There was also that moment about 5 or 6 years ago, and I feel like it was something I was noting but never really wrote about. And Tom, I don't know if you wrote about it, but I'm sure you noted it, where like you'd have festivals in like Texas and it'd be like Antoine and Power Trip, like punk associated rappers and expansive hardcore and hardcore adjacent bands. What was happening kind of in the water 5 to 7 years ago that was leading to those kinds of like hybridized moments and ultimately hybridized bands?
I think that was a sort of a skate culture thing for the most part. I think Odd Future had a lot to do with it, and Odd Future being like,
yeah, Babylon, shout out Lee.
Yep, yeah, and the Odd Future Trash Talk crossover was a big thing.
Let's actually quickly listen to, this is Blossom and Burn, this is Trash Talk with Tyler, the Creator, and Haji. This is actually from 2012, so this has been in the water for a decade and or more.
Trash Talk, if you saw them even at like South by Southwest, like an industry function, like it would be total bedlam. Like it would be insane. The fact that they crossed over in a way when they were like, everything was super fast and hard and insane was like, that was a real testament to like, it. You don't have to like dumb this stuff down or water it down or cross it over with other genres for it to really work in any space.
Was it not perceived as heretical at all within hardcore circles?
I don't know, because I don't necessarily consider myself to be part of the hardcore community. I'm just somebody who like appreciates it. And that's like when you ask whether it's a sound or an ethic, I don't think it's either. I think it's a group of people, like this big expansive cloud of people who are all like starting bands with each other and doing zines and podcasts and stuff. And for the most part, from what I've seen, were the bands like Trash Talk and Turnstile that have jumped out. I think people are psyched about it for the most part. I think some people are a little puzzled and there's like moments of annoyance, but like,
it's not the 90s anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. People are not quite as hung up on things crossing over as they once were. And I think you see a lot of people who come from hardcore in some sense, like out in the world doing other things and still reaching out to it. Like I saw Turnstile open for Suicide Boys last year. Suicide Boys are doing their big tour this year where they've got Code Orange and Knock Loose on the bill with them. And those are like the biggest hardcore bands. And Code Orange may or may not still be a hardcore band. They might be a mall metal band now. But like that stuff can work on like these big stages where people feel that like sense of community, which is, I think, part of the deal with Suicide Boys, even though Suicide Boys is not in any sense like hardcore associated at all. But those guys like come from it.
Tom, I'm glad you brought up Suicide Boys because I do think there is a little bit of something in the physicality of the spaces that were associated with kind of like 1.0 and 2.0 SoundCloud rap. And to a slightly, I don't want to say lesser degree, but a parallel space with what's happening in like the Playboy Cardi universe, Rolling Loud mosh pits, etc. There is something about the physicality of those spaces that reminds me a lot of the physicality of hardcore shows. And that, it's not an ethic, it's not a sound, but it is, to what Chris has said, it is a feeling. And maybe a lot of the changes in hip hop in the last 5 or 10 years, especially on the younger side, are echoing what has long been normal practice in hardcore spaces. Chris, what do you think?
I'm trying to think of whether or not it's that, or it's in fact, like, for me, like, I'm responding to it the way I responded to Griselda a few years ago, where I was like, oh, I just got a high grade dose of the real ish. You know what I mean? And I feel like I've been away from it. I've been like living in air conditioning, and now I finally got real breeze hitting me or something. Like, it's, that's how I felt when I started listening to this stuff a couple of years ago more, is that it was a mixture of like this breath of fresh air with something that was really reassuring and nostalgic at times. You know, like, I think that obviously, like, one of the hallmarks of hardcore is like there is some choreography to it. There are like these moves, there are these points in certain songs that do certain things. There's breakdowns, there's mosh parts, there's stage dives, there's like this idea that there is a little bit of theater to it that I think I missed, in the same way Tom was describing standing in the back of indie rock shows with a $9 IPA. Like, I think I felt that same way. I felt that same way going to shows in LA when I would go. It's kind of like, I almost feel like I'm watching like Big Three basketball or something. I don't know. It just feels like it's all...
Ken Olin on 30-something?
No, I just felt like it was all exhibitions. It was all exhibition games. It wasn't real. It didn't feel like there was anything at stake. It didn't feel like... It felt like every band that I saw had already like made it, and like were already playing some weird, like, stale corporate... I don't even mean to be slipping back into punk rock terminology, but it just always felt like we're going to a show with quotes around it rather than like there's anything dangerous or exciting that could possibly happen at this thing.
These days, a whole lot of big shows feel like branding exercises. There's ads everywhere, and you're like, there's the whatever Sierra Mist tent and stuff. That has not pervaded hardcore at all. People are mad about things selling out now or whatever, but like, you're still going to shows in warehouses and basements, and it's still an intense experience, and it's like a full immersion thing, and that's
it's
why
it's not ventilated.
Yeah, and no. Yeah, and sometimes like literally, like
that's a good name for a hard... No ventilation is a good name for a compilation or a podcast if anybody wants to take. That's good. Just credit Chris.
A good show is one where it's like hard to breathe, especially in the summertime. It gets hairy up
if
there.
Your glasses get fogged up the second you hit the door. It means you're in the right place.
Yeah.
Okay, but could we be talking about death metal? Could we be talking about art house bluegrass? Like, could we be talking about free jazz? Like, the simple fact of obscure spaces, crammed, like, those are hallmarks of several kinds of music communities.
Do dudes stage dive at bluegrass shows? Is there like a Hate 5-6 for bluegrass?
I'm not on that corner of Instagram, although I would love to be. If someone would like to point me to it, please do. I'm simply saying that there is something sturdy and persistent about hardcore structure that seems to maintain walls around it. And I wonder maybe if we could talk about what that is. Like, what is the through line that holds these bands together, even though you describe some of them as hardcore-ish? What's the through line musically that holds them together?
To me, it's the intensity of connection between the artist and the audience. And even whether that's in the live setting, no matter whether you're watching Drug Church or Drain or whatever, you feel like they could only be doing this music because you're here. They only want to be playing this music for you because you chose to come see it. It's not like a passive experience. It's an active choice to like music like that, and to support music like that, and to support it in this way. So that's the feeling that I'm talking about. You know what I mean? Like, it's work. It's actual, like, you should feel like it took effort to go to a show. It took effort to support a band. It took effort to unpack a record. And one of the craziest things, I'm sure, Tom, you've had this experience too, is you go to a show and it's just like the band that's like the second opener is playing. Tom's wearing a One Step Closer shirt, and I saw them over like early in the summer. And I was like, I was only really like barely familiar with their stuff, and just like watching hundreds of kids scream their lyrics back at them. Now, I know One Step Closer is probably a bigger band than I'm giving them credit for, but like that kind of connection, like, you don't see that when you go see like the opener at rock show number 5.
No,
you know, in a big city. Like, you don't see like that kind of like intense relationship between artist and audience.
What are those kids finding in that band? Like, what Is it an emotionally primal thing? Is it a psychological? Is it musical? Like, where, not to try to get under the hood of it too much, but because I do think you have to respect it as pure experience, but what exactly is it that's thriving in that space? What is the safety of that space transmuting to those young people, do you think? Christ, I said young
people. I can't believe it. And you said transmuting.
I said young people.
It's Gulch, dude. Just listen to it.
Listen to Gulch. Listen to Gulch.
I liked it when somebody transmuted their fist through my collarbone when I was watching Encore last month.
Tom, are there any videos of you moshing on any of these YouTube channels?
Not. I sorry.
I just want to say I do not get in the pit. My glasses just get too dislodged, man. I need.
I tell you what. I went to a festival in Richmond a couple months ago, and I spent the whole thing at the back. And the last couple bands, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna do it. And I'm a giant man. Like I'm extremely
Tom's big boy.
Tall.
Tom's a big boy.
Yeah. So I'm like, all right. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be on the edge of the pit. I'm going to swing my arms around a little bit. I'm going to feel like I belong, and nobody's going to come along and crowd kill me. Crowd killing, if for those who are not familiar, is a term of art for when you are standing near the pit and somebody kills you.
Destroys you, yeah.
So my plan did not work out. I got shut down so hard. But, you know, that's part of it. We're all getting older now, but you got to take the hit every once in a while.
When you go home, how do you explain that to the wife and kid?
Oh, I'm like, hey, you guys want to see a video of what the show was like? My kids have been like, is that a fight? Was there a fight at your show? And I'm like, no, that's how they dance. That's what we do.
John, you're asking us to kind of describe why, like,
poetry.
You know, I mean, like, you kind of are. Like, I mean, like, when I've talked with some buddies of mine who also are aging gentlemen who might have been into hardcore more in their youth than they are now, and they're like, I don't know, like, so what's popping off right with this scene? And there's a couple of different videos that I've sent out to multiple people. Like, for one, it's Turnstile playing in Oxnard a couple years ago, like right when Glow On came out, I think, and right around that time there's a show they played in Oxnard where they come on, they play Mystery. The place is essentially turning upside down. It's like a volcanic eruption. And you don't have to describe it. You just have to show them that. You can just watch Tsunami's, I think it's like their first show at a house show in San Jose. And there's like a dude dressed like an Olympic boxer just pounding people in the pit, like just knocking people out. And you can see the singer from Gulch in the crowd. There's like a tangibility. There's a realness to it. I almost feel like I can't even describe what that feels like when you feel like you're part of something like that, even if you're watching it on YouTube.
That festival in Richmond that I mentioned, like, that was a much smaller festival than Sound and Fury. But you know, I probably saw like 30 or 40 bands that weekend. And I was like, I was looking around like, there might not be one single person here who makes music as their full-time job. There's no money in it. So everybody's doing it for the love. And everybody's like, not only like making the music and like driving cross country and stuff, but also like putting their physical health on the line to play these shows. You listen to like podcast interviews when hardcore singers are talking about their injuries, they talk about them like they're football players or pro wrestlers or something, except it's always like, oh yeah, my friend Jimmy threw me through a plate glass window or whatever. You got to commit, and you got to respect the commitment from those who do it.
Tom, what's a good band that you saw at that festival? Let's listen to a song from them as we go to the break.
Let's do Excalibur by Mind Force. That is a hit right there.
This is Excalibur by Mind Force. We will be back in a moment.
Hey y'all, it's Kyra Blackwell from Wirecutter, the product recommendation service from the New York Times, and I test mattresses. Today I am testing 7 mattresses, all brand concealed. It just feels like such a daunting endeavor to pick the right mattress. This mattress is very supportive. It's just like very easy to shift positions. We've considered nearly four dozen foam, innerspring, and hybrid mattresses. We're looking out for edge support, motion isolation, and firmness levels. We are cross-referencing our data between testers, which includes people of all different shapes, sizes, and sleep preferences. When it came right out the box, it smelled like lavender. I'm not sure how long that'll last. I finished compiling all of my tester surveys. One tester noted the mattress had some give and underlying firmness and support. At Wirecutter, we do the work so you don't have to. For independent product reviews and recommendations for the real world, come visit us at nytimes.com/wirecutter. It feels very squishy, but in a good way.
John, are you up on Mind Force? Because I feel like you would like Mind Force.
No. Well, this is, I was going to say. So, Tom, when you sent me your list of hardware, Mind Force, I think maybe was the first band on the list. And I listened to Excalibur, and holy shit, what a record.
Yeah, that's a joint.
Oh my God. I was stomping around my apartment like a buffoon listening to this record. This is an incredible, powerful, goddamn record. This is really, really great. First of all, tell me a little bit about Mind Force.
All right, so Mind Force is from the Hudson Valley, New York.
Hey,
there's a scene there.
Locals.
A huge scene, yeah. And the dude, Jay, the singer, everybody in Mind Force has like five other bands. They've got like a whole cottage industry going. And the singer, Jay, is a super New York dude. If you talk to him about music or listen to him talking about music, he'll be like, yeah, I like Rock Marciano and early Mariah Carey. And also, like, Sick of It All or whatever. Like, that's a cool guy. That's a guy I want to hang out with.
Is this my friend? Do I know this guy?
That's what I'm saying. You would be friends with this dude.
You probably follow him on Instagram. You don't even know.
That's probably true. I probably follow his art account.
The videos that Chris was talking about, like, the video of Mind Force's, like, first show back after the pandemic, when Jay comes out with, like, a bottle of champagne, is like, hardcore's back. It's a celebration, baby. It's so good. I love it. You know, that's a band. Those are all, like, you know, they're probably our age or close to it. They're, like, they're guys with jobs, and they don't tour because they have jobs, and they got kids and stuff. And this is what they do on the weekend. And it's so cool, and they're so good at it. And they've all been in bands forever. And like Mind Force is the one where really everything seemingly came together. So they'll play these big festivals and stuff, and they'll do little weekend joints and stuff, but they can't be a full-time band because these people have lives. And I think that's just, it's beautiful that they're like devoting so much of their like spare time to cranking these bangers out. And they really have bangers.
And this is sort of touching on what you were mentioning earlier about the precarity, in a sense, of the scene, physical precarity, economic precarity, potentially stylistic precarity. There is something on the edge and dangerous and potentially self-inflicted harm about making the choice to make this music.
Yeah, and there's expiration dates built in. Like, there are legacy hardcore bands. There's whatever, Madball or Terror or whatever, these bands that have been around forever. But for the most part, hardcore bands will last for, you know, a year, a couple of years, like maybe put out an album. The number of bands that played Sound and Fury that have more than one album is very small. Both headlining bands have one album out.
Yeah. It's pretty rare when you have like a band like, I guess, like Drug Church, who's on like what, album number four, and are like arguably like peaking, you know what I mean? Like in terms of like their renown, like at this, with this last record, Hygiene.
You want to talk about Drug Church? Because Drug Church, of all the bands that you guys sent to me, Drug Church felt like the most theatrical, like definitely like...
Definitely wouldn't say that.
Okay, great.
Theatrical? There's not
clean. I know what you mean though, because Patrick, the singer, is like a little bit of a ham, and like he's a lyrics guy, and all his songs are these little like character sketches.
Yeah, I mean, he would probably not call his band hardcore, although I definitely think they're hardcore, like they're in the under the big tent.
So he's one of the hosts of that show, Axe to Grind, and the term
and Tom Sheehan. And
so
and
he Bob hosts the show and is the singer songwriter
of Drug Church. And the term that
explain
they
explain Drug Church, if it's not theatrical, forgive me, I'm going to get duffed out on my street corner for this. Thank you so much.
I don't think you got too much to worry about from Patrick there.
Okay, but tell me, explain Drug Church in context to the other bands we've been
talking Church
about.
Would not sound unfamiliar to anybody who liked riff-tastic underground rock in the mid to late 90s, like Seaweed and stuff like that. I don't know if
Seaweed they're like a 90s alt rock band for sure.
But has, I think Patrick's my favorite lyricist in this, whatever you want to call it, genre scene, whatever. I find that like his lyrics are funny, cutting, ironic, sarcastic, satirical. They're just like so dense and interesting. As Tom mentioned, they have narrative to them. This record, Hygiene, has really like leapt out at me and got its claws in me, like the way, unlike like almost any record this year.
What's a good Drug Church song for us to listen to right now?
Can I suggest the Drug Church song that probably is the least Drug Church song?
Sure.
It's Athlete on the Bench, which is the final song on the album.
Let's get into it. Drug Church, Athlete on the Bench. So I feel like we've been cycling back and forth around hardcore-ish, back to hardcore, what are the through lines? We didn't really talk about Turnstile, and I was being glib about Turnstile at the beginning, but Turnstile is an extraordinarily expansive band musically, and I wonder if you can talk a little bit about the evolution in Turnstile sound and also its relationship, how the world of hardcore has perceived it as it has changed and evolved.
Turnstile comes from Baltimore, which is the greatest city in the world. And the members of
DJ
that band,
Techniques and Turnstile, yes. Yeah.
So their singer used to be the drummer for a Baltimore band called Trapped Under Ice, which was like a super hard, I've heard people describe it as like, they brought like camo shorts and hoodies back to hardcore and like basketball
they
jerseys.
They rule
like,
though. They're really good.
They're so good. And so when he started Turnstile, he had that going for him. And so they were automatically already the band. And they started at a time when I was not all the way in on hardcore, when I wasn't paying enough attention. And when I heard their first couple of records, I was like, this is what's popping right now? They sound like 311. And I was not wrong, but I did not realize that that is awesome. And it took me a little while. Their whole thing, they are so energetic, they're so much fun to watch, and they're so sincere. They're total evangelists for what they do, and they have always been the band in hardcore for like their entire existence, pretty much. They were already a big deal in the genre as soon as their first album came out, if not before then. And their trajectory, where they've just gotten bigger with every successive release, is like that's a pretty normal thing in the rest of the world. And it's very rare in hardcore. But they have gotten way bigger. But they still, you know, they still play hardcore shows. They did the FYA festival in Florida, and they brought Akulu and Truth Cult and Ceremony on tour with them. Their record release show for Time and Space, the last album, they played in DC and they played in a big church hall. And it's one of the best shows I've ever seen in my life. You can find a video of that show online. You can see me in it. You won't really see me moshing. You just look above everybody else. Probably 2 minutes into that show, the singer did the best stage dive I've ever seen in my life. He jumped off the stage and he hung there for like an eternity, like standing under him and looking up. It was like he was like frozen, and then he came out and like flipped into the crowd and got a good, you know, 15 feet in. I don't, like, it didn't seem physically possible. Like, these dudes are athletes, and they're also like, you know, they're fully in that show. The drummer was wearing a hospital gown because he had, I forget what he got hospitalized for, but he like checked himself out against doctor's orders and drove to the show because he wasn't going to miss it, because it was like that important to them that they would play this church hall for their record release show.
There was a vibe when I was like first getting into underground music in the 90s, and it kind of culminates, I guess, like Jawbreaker is a good example of a band that was like incredibly meaningful to a small but passionate amount of people, and then increasingly got bigger, and then when they decided to make a record for a major label, were kind of excommunicated to some extent from certain underground circles, and since have been had like this huge sort of like recognition and revival, and have gone on reunion tours and played their like historically relevant records, including the one that they were excommunicated for in the first place, Dear You. So there was always like this sense that like underground music sometimes eats its young, like back then. And the thing that I love about Turnstile, aside from the fact that I just really love their music, I think for me personally, like it's, I prefer stuff like Drug Church, but like if I was 19 right now, I think Turnstile would be like the best band I'd ever seen in my life. And it's awesome to see them actually get supported by the scene that they come from and in turn support that scene. So like when they do a late night show, they're just spreading the gospel. You know what I mean? Like they're just getting the word out. It's pretty amazing to see.
And people are psyched about it. Like people who are from hardcore and people who are not. They're a very easy band to get. We've seen like Demi Lovato and Post Malone pose for pictures with them and stuff. We're probably going to see a lot more of that because they're like, they look
Demi
incredible.
Lovato, a known embracer of heavy music for years.
I mean,
since the Disney
sure,
era.
Fine. Yeah. Not this though. This is something else.
Read my profile of her from like 2008.
So wait, John, what was the concern troll about how contentious Turnstile is?
First of all, well, also first, as a sidebar, I think the last Turnstile record is less good than the previous Turnstile records.
Get out
but
of
also,
here.
I do think like, that's fine. I'm here. It's fine. Like I'm a critic. I have opinions. If people can be out here even saying the Beyonce record is maybe not that good, I can say that the most recent Turnstile record, I didn't like that much. It's okay.
People
it's
out there
space.
Can say that about Beyonce. You want to go on the record about that?
I happen to really enjoy the Beyonce record. I'm just
good,
saying.
Good for you. Saying. That's great.
So concern trolling is perhaps not the right phrase, but I do think that in the same way that I would see conversations around what Trash Talk was doing in and out of the scene, and Trash Talk, you know, you made the joke about merch earlier. Trash Talk literally has an entire merchandise streetwear line, like a Babylon and store in Los Angeles. I mean, it's there are philosophical tensions at play.
As with anything, I think we have to differentiate between like, are you criticizing the band or people who are into the band? And there's, I'm sure, a lot of people who like the only hardcore band that they even know is Turnstile. And to those people, I say, God bless. You know what I mean? Like, it's that's how you get into bands. That's how you get into bands. Yeah.
No, I start with the early stuff. I don't know what you're talking about.
And you don't have to be a kid to get into it either.
Me and Tom, case in point.
Yeah.
Exhibit A and Exhibit B.
I mean, what, you guys are the youngest people I've ever had on podcast. What are you talking about? what a weird thing for you to say. The youngest. Okay, can we get into a couple bands that you sent me that we haven't talked about yet? Tom, you sent me Soul Glow. Let's listen to, there's a bunch of good Soul Glow songs. Let's listen to Gold Chain Punk, Who Gonna Beat My Ass. Tom, what's the vibe on Soul Glow?
I mean, Soul Glow is real interesting. They're real arty. They're very lyrical. They're also a band of mostly people of color in a scene that is like hardcore, like every other American genre of music, is the invention of black people. It has been predominantly white for most of my life. It does not necessarily, I mean, it's probably still predominantly white, but it's very different now. There's a whole lot of bands made up, including Gulch, largely of people of color. Soul Glow writes about it more than some of them do. They're politically revolutionary and real, real musically like jagged and experimental. They get into like rap and stuff like that. They're not necessarily like a mainline hardcore band. Like they didn't play Sound and Fury, and they've been like a creature of the screamo scene, which is almost like parallel to hardcore with crossover. My friend Alex from the band Infinite Island is like friends with them, and Infinite Island is like full on screamo. And it's weird how there's like a differentiation between genre and then a differentiation between like scene and community. They're not always the same thing. Soul Glow sounds to me like a hardcore band, and like a great one. Like they are super energetic, they're real explosive, they're real splattery and messy. And they also make you read the lyric sheet, and they're funny, which is not always the case with hardcore bands.
A lot of the bands that I think Tom and I sent you, John, play with a degree of confidence that's pretty mind-blowing. Soul Glow certainly has a kind of air of, we know we have it right now. You know, like I think a lot of the bands that I'm responding to, whether it's Drug Church or Fiddlehead or Military Gun, which are all sort of more like Rock, I think, or even End It, who I sent you. That's what, which is like more on the hardcore side of things. There's like a swagger to a lot of these bands.
Tremendous swagger, like off the charts with it.
Let's listen to New Age Slavery by End It.
In underground music and in DIY culture, there, I guess when I should speak from personal experience, when I was first getting into that music, like there was a certain self-effacement. We don't really know how to play, or like these guitars aren't tuned, or like I can't sing, and all those things can still apply. But when you watch Drain run a 5,000 person crowd, and there are like surfboards and beach balls being thrown around in the audience, and they have like sing-alongs going, and the singer's getting bum-rushed by like 30 people and getting moshed into the crowd, but still like conducting the show. And they're like playing on a razor's edge with this precision. I mean, it's DIY, but these particular people are very, very, very good at what they do. That's one thing I would say about a lot of these bands.
How do you feel that this moment is evolutionarily different from, I don't know if this still happens in New York, but like the Black and Blue Ball and like a lot of those kind of like long-running New York hardcore institutions? How is what's happening now different from the kind of like early legacy of hardcore, whether it's musical or social?
Well, that stuff is still out there, and Black and Blue Ball still happens. Most of those bands are still going, and it's cool. Terror played Sound and Fury, and they could easily play the Black and Blue Ball. Probably a lot of those bands could. But I think one of the things that's different is there's a lot of different sounds that fall under that umbrella. If you look at the Sound and Fury lineup, it had death metal bands, and it had stuff that is like hardcore adjacent is the term that a lot of people use, where it's, you know, there's bands that played that are basically indie rock, like Show Me the Body played. But all this stuff, it's more united in spirit than in sound. And I don't know that that's a new thing, but I've definitely seen a lot more of it lately.
Several bands playing Sound and Fury have like Archers of Loaf riffs, but that doesn't mean they're not hardcore, you know, which I guess is a pretty obscure like way of looking at it. But no matter where they're drawing from musically, I think that there is like this kind of overall coherent aesthetic happening. I mean, it just is a testament to, I guess, hardcore's like age as a genre, right? Like where now you can go see certain festivals and you can go see, I don't know, I mean, pick a band that's done a reunion show recently where like you can go see
Satia is happening now. There's always
Satia is a screamo band. It's like they're incredible. I mean, like I would definitely go see them live. But like I was even thinking like when they do like any kind of like Rev, like Youth of Today, like Gorilla Biscuits getting together.
Yeah, that stuff still happens. Avail just played in Richmond last weekend. Like they're back together now. They said they were never getting back together, so I'm very psyched to have them back on the landscape. That's my favorite live band ever. There's a continuity. Like, the old heads are still out there. Some of them are forming new bands. Some of them are playing in reunions. You can look at a band like Ceremony has been around and has been, like, changing their sound up for, you know, 15 years or something.
Pretty much every record, yeah.
Yeah, and their new stuff like sounds like New Order or whatever, but they still play hardcore shows, and they still play their
old songs.
Play
power violence shows.
Yeah.
Chris, you just jump back into some of the newer bands.
Mm-hmm.
Scowl was one that you had put on your list. Tell me a little bit about
Scowl. Yeah, Scowl's going to the Hall of Fame because they opened their Sound and Fury set with a cover of Waiting Room by Fugazi.
So sick.
Which was just like an absolutely like awesome moment. Like,
so
to,
baller
to, watch.
To like own that moment like that.
And it's like the sound of the crowd realizing what's happening when the bass line comes in is pretty amazing. But the Scowl song that I recommended was Ground from How Flowers Grow.
Let's listen to Ground by Scowl.
This is another San Jose band. There's another Bay Area band, like San Jose band, that's just like, I love, I love when you can see the lattice work between like certain bands in a scene, and you can see the support from the various bands that they show for one another. Scal just recently opened up for Limp Bizkit, funnily enough, but like,
really?
But like, is one of the, I think, one of the best live bands going right now. And this record is really great.
It's funny, you know, hardcore is supposed to be this like anti-star genre where everybody is all on an equal footing, but there are stars, and Kat from Scowl is a star. Like, she's someone who just really like pops out and grabs your attention immediately.
Where do you think that this is all going to go in a year, in 2 years? Like, are we going to see, in that same way that there are those waves of like Trash Talk has a wave, Turnstile has a wave, Touche Amore has a wave, is that just going to happen more and more frequently? Is this a thing? I mean, I feel like we're having a conversation in 1993, but it's like, are major labels going to start kind of like plucking these bands?
There's a couple of really good labels right now servicing the scene anyway. So I don't know what like a major would really be able to do for a lot of these bands. The thing that's the biggest difference, you say we're having this conversation like it's 1993, is you can listen to all this stuff right now. And it's the accessibility of it and the ability to discover and then try out Spy, Gel, Drain, Gulch, go through and just be like, you can just find the pockets that you like here, you know, at cost, but still, you can still play around in a way that like when Tom and I were growing up, this was like standing in a record store with 5 7-inches trying to decide which one we wanted to buy.
Or going to the record store because that's where there were the flyers for the shows.
Right.
You wouldn't find out about them any other way.
And we certainly didn't have something like Hate 5-6 where you can watch 8 Drug Church shows over the last 4 or 5 years and watch them develop or progress as a band. And the same goes for any of these bands. Like, the historical reservoir of media that's out there for this stuff. You know, I would consider myself, honestly, a dilettante when it comes to hardcore at this point. And yet, the acceleration from which going from, oh, I'd like to start listening to this stuff again in like the early pandemic to now has been like remarkable. And I don't know how that would have played out at any other time in like history in terms of being able to listen to this music and like accrue it and then also like piece together what the scene is.
I've found my experience in hardcore to be like really welcoming. Fist Through the Collarbone or No Fist Through the Collarbone. You know, I don't try to represent myself as anything other than like a middle-aged writer who's out here vulturing. I've had a couple people read me the Riot Act about like writing reviews of shows in DIY spaces where they think they're going to get shut down. But other than that, it's been, people are happy for the attention, but not fiending for the attention. And I feel like that's like the healthiest place that seeing a genre of music could be. Like, nobody's like hitting me up on Twitter all the time to cover their bands, but also nobody's like, you know, how dare you like blow up our spot in public about it. It seems it is continuing to grow and thrive organically, and I don't really see any reason why that has to stop, or whether it has to like spike or dip or anything. Like, it just seems like hardcore is in a great place right now. And even when a band like Gulch, who's like super important to that world, calls it quits, there's 15 other bands that are bubbling and are like ready to take that spot. I don't think there has to be some dramatic change in the arc anytime soon.
Well, I look forward to spending $300 to $400 on a rare Gulch t-shirt.
You're the problem, man.
Yeah, I am the problem. It's you're not the first to say that.
I am the Baron of Depop. John, what's the band out of all these that jumped out at you the most? Come on. It's like you got the Naked Ears.
First of all, Gulch, I thought was incredible. I really thought that Mind Force that we were talking about earlier was incredible. And we're going to go out with the other song that we didn't get to talk about, but by a band I thought was really good. And I'll announce what that is as we're going out. So, number one, if you have rare hardcore t-shirts, drop me a line, podcast@nytimes.com.
Absolutely.
If anybody in New York wants to go to hardcore shows, because I can't go to hardcore shows with my friend Chris and Tom, because they don't live in New York. If anybody wants to go to hardcore shows, send me a DM. Send me an email. Maybe we'll go to hardcore shows. Maybe I'll get a fist in the collarbone. It'll be a great story for the memoir. That is our show. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Chris. I appreciate y'all and love y'all. You can listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us, podcast@nytimes.com. Get in the Facebook group, tinyurl.com/podcast Facebook. Get on the Discord, which is jumping, tinyurl.com/podcast.
Damn, you got a Discord, John?
Come on, man. You know we stay in the Discord. You know it's really good. Subscribe to Popcast anywhere you get your audio content. That would be Apple, Spotify, Google, etc. Our producer, as always, is the hardest of hardcore, Pedro Rosado from Head Stepper Media. We'll be back next week. We're going to go out with an excellent song by Drain, not to be confused with Drain Gang, not to be confused with Marc Jacobs' collaborators, Drain Gang, although we do stand Drain Gang. This is Drain. Feel the pressure. Feel the pressure of a thousand eyes staring at me.